Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to help with your gardening quandaries. My guest this week is Alana Carmer, who is the Royal Horticultural Society Schools Programme Manager. Our thanks to Suttons of Torquay, sponsors of this podcast. Several bits of news this week. I was at the Rochford's International Rose Trials at Letty Green in Herts. It's really amazing what Paul Rochford has done. Beautiful plot, bit of old meadowland cultivated, and 68 new varieties of roses from breeders around the world, all planted, ready to be tested and judged for the best over the next 2 years. While I was there, I met the specialist fruit grower, Will Sibley. Will's been on this podcast in the past, and he was telling me about a climate change trial at Brogdale. Brogdale, of course, has the national fruit collection, thousands of different varieties of apples, pears and plums, and they've logged the peak flowering of each cultivar of all the apples they grow for many years. And it's a very good indicator of how the climate is changing. And they find that the flowering overall is now 16 days earlier than it was 30 or 40 years ago. They've got another trial with polytunnels, one with the ordinary temperature, and then another polytunnel with the temperature 2 degrees higher, and the third one 4 degrees higher. The results on that are really quite worrying. At the higher temperature, a lot of our heritage varieties, like the Cox's Orange Pippin, wouldn't really be suitable to grow if we do get that 4 degree overall average increase in winter temperature. We would still be able to grow the higher temperature apples, things like Gala and Pink Lady. But I just wonder whether some of our heritage orchards that are being planted in schools shouldn't now include some of these higher temperature varieties just to be on the safe side. Will was telling me too about a hailstorm in France. I've been so busy over the last 2 weeks or so, I haven't seen much television or read the news. And he tells me that hailstones the size of tennis balls came down. 2 or 3 people were killed with them. And it's absolutely decimated several of the horticultural nursery production units in that area. It just goes to show how those of us who grow things for a living are entirely in the hands of Mother Nature. Will's always a good fellow to chat to, and he has an olive orchard up in Harwich. It's 3 years old, and already they're picking ripe olives, apparently, and hope in the not-too-distant future to have their own pressed olive oil. At present, they're just selling the fresh olives. He says they're pretty easy to propagate. You can root them from soft and hardwood cuttings. And of course, with Xylella disease, particularly in some parts of Italy and Spain, England could well be a clean place to propagate olives. So there we are. There are pluses and minuses to changes in our climate. (laughs) Our guest this week is Alana Karma. She's the program manager for schools for the Royal Horticultural Society. And of course, they do a tremendous amount of work with school children right across the country. Alana, can you sort of outline to us the program that the RHS is now active in the case of schools?
Yes, so what we do is the Campaign for School Gardening. It's a program that we've been running since 2007. And the idea is really just to encourage schools to get kids outside and getting in touch with nature, understanding how to grow food, and feeling the benefits while also building skills that they can develop while out in the garden. Over those years that we've been running, we've grown to sort of 40,000 members. So that's actually grown from schools, but also now we're seeing a lot of community groups joining, youth groups, lots of people who just want to get young people outside.
Yeah.
So it's getting big.
It is indeed. Well, when you talk about 40,000 schools,
yes.
an awful lot of people. And you have area representatives, don't you, going out to schools?
Yes, so we're part of the RHS's communities team, and that also encompasses our outreach team. So we've got outreach advisors dotted around the UK, and they will work with community groups and schools and just try and give that a sort of extra helping hand to get people growing.
Now, I'm particularly interested this week because you've just announced winners from your school's competition. Now, can you tell us the framework of that? How do you sort schools out? How do you sort the different ages of children out? How do people take part? All those kinds of things.
Yes, so it's very difficult. So we have been running our flagship competition, I'll call it, which is School Gardeners of the Year, for 8 years now. And the competition has three different categories. So we're looking for a young school gardener of the year, which is someone aged 5 to 16. We're looking for a school gardening champion of the year, which is a teacher or an adult that is inspiring young people to grow. And we're also looking for a team of the year. So that could be a gardening club, it might be a whole class, it sometimes is the whole school. So we search high and low across the UK trying to find these amazing representatives of what people are doing out in their schools at the moment.
And when you say 5 to 16, there are categories for each key stage at schools, isn't there?
Yes, so the way it is broken down, Young School Gardener of the Year is split into four key stage categories. It's very difficult to put a 5-year-old up against a 16-year-old. As you can imagine, their knowledge is very different. So we break it down into four categories. So it's key stage or the Scottish equivalent. And we have a winner from each of those. And then an overall winner is chosen across there. And there is one winner chosen for champion and one winner chosen for team. We launched the competition in January. And schools are invited to nominate someone for one of these awards. And then we paper judge them, have a read of what they've supplied us, pick our finalists, and then the finalists get to go away and make a film that really represents what they do and why they love gardening, why they love being outside. And we have a lovely day where we get to watch all those videos. And we're not looking for horticultural excellence in this competition. We're looking for passion. We're looking for people going out in their communities, maybe helping others. People who've got a really good understanding of why it's important to grow and to get outside. So it's been a fantastic competition this year. We've just, as you said, we've just announced the winners. And it's great. We've got a lovely winner for Young School Gardener of the Year called William, who's 11. He was just fantastic and really encompassed what we were looking for.
Now, the videos, you know, I've seen one or two of them from several years ago. It's surprising what schools can do now to show somebody a long way away sitting in an office what the school is like, what their gardening conditions or plant growing conditions are like. And the children actually perform very well to camera, don't they?
They do, yes. It can be difficult. We have a very large range of schools that take part. So it's really lovely to be able to see these videos and see, like you said, exactly what they're doing. They're very innovative. You have a lot of city schools. So this year, all three winners of the different categories, so Young School Gardener, Champion and Team, they all came from cities this year. which is really lovely because it just shows that that urban gardening is definitely coming through. Last year we saw a clean sweep from secondary schools, which again was really pleasing for us because secondary schools is generally a harder age group to get gardening going. So that was really exciting to see. And yes, they're very innovative. In any space they can find, we'll find schools taking over their school car parks with pots and raised beds or growing on their roofs or anything like that. They'll find a way, which is really, really cool. I mean, I'm really happy.
The clear Perspex cycle racks are quite useful for frost protection in the spring, aren't they?
Yeah. Absolutely, yes. Make use of anything they can find. They're very resourceful.
Yeah. And if you get primary and infant school children interested enough, some of them will actually carry it through into the comprehensive education, won't they?
Yes, we really hope so. William, our winner this year, he's 11. He's actually going to be going off to his senior school in September. So we really hope that that passion will follow through to that school, because he's in gardening since he was 7 at his school now. So we hope that he'll take that with him, and we think that the school he's going to, that, you know, they're aware now that he's won this competition, and I think they're prepared for that now, and they know that he's going to come in and hopefully kickstart a bit more gardening in their school. So it's great to see that transition, and a lot of the older category winners and finalists this year are also going on to study horticulture in college, or they're doing qualifications at their settings at the moment. So it's lovely to see that transition from, yeah, very young all the way up through to hopefully into a career.
Now, you also give an award for champions, and it's my experience that they're absolutely crucial. If you've got one person at a school who has a passion for growing things and goes in and waters at weekends, that's what you need as a starting point. And you recognise this in the Champion Award?
Yes. I mean, as you said, it is vital for the, you know, ongoing use of the garden to have someone that will champion it within the school. It's very difficult with the pressures from the curriculum, Ofsted, everything, to try and find space within the school to grow, having the time, all that kind of thing. And we do find that it's usually at least one very, very passionate person that keeps it going. But it also requires a leadership team that believe in it, a head teacher that believes in it. So for us, this award is really important to just recognise, really, these people that are going out there and using their time to give these skills to young people. Our winner this year is actually a parent volunteer. So she's incredible. She's gone and educated herself how to grow food, because she recognised, she lives in a flat, she's in London, and she realised that her kids were growing up not really knowing where their food is coming from, equally children around them in their community. So she went and taught herself how to garden, how to grow food, so that she could bring it back to her community. And she set up a community garden, and they've got about 50 other families involved in it now, and they all garden together. And then what she's done is taken her knowledge to her son's school, which is Ashmount Primary School in London, and developed a garden there. And now you've got a space that all of the kids there can enjoy. They all now understand how to grow food. They can eat it. They can use it in the school kitchen. And again, the families are coming into the school, helping to keep it going. So it's very sustainable, and that's really what we want to recognise, because it's that passion. She's giving up her free time to come and get that going, and it's really incredible.
I mean, I've been watching with some interest Pershaw School and Christian Foxley,
yes,
who's the winner of the Key Stage 4.
He was one of our finalists, yes, for Key Stage 4.
And he's going on to Pershaw College, and I think one of the scholars at the school last year is already there. So
yes,
an established practice is being set up.
Yeah.
And in Pershaw especially, plenty of jobs in that Evesham area with horticultural crops, nurseries, all kinds of horticultural activity.
It's fantastic. We do see quite a few young people that come through our competition actually do end up going further into horticulture, which is just brilliant, because that's what we want. We want to inspire people to continue that journey, even if it's not going to be their career in the future. At least they've built skills, they've got a good understanding of why it's important to be outside, why it's important to protect this planet. Christian is a an amazing student. What was interesting this year, we did have quite a number of young people that are suffering from particular different anxiety or troubles and things like that. And I think that's a real testament to how horticulture can be very therapeutic for young people.
I think for all of us, quite honestly, Alana.
Yes.
You know, if you have a tough day and you walk
getting out in the garden.
Yeah, fresh air. Yeah.
Just
takes your mind off things.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody listening is connected to a school and wants to get involved in the competition next year, what do they need to do?
So the competition will open again in January next year. The best thing to do is to go to the Campaigns for School Gardening website. You can either register your school or if the school is already registered, just contact us via the information on the website and we can add that particular individual onto the school's account. And then they'll receive our newsletters. They'll receive all the information about the competition for next year. But from January, it'll all be live on the website anyway, so you can have a look there. It's very simple to enter as well. We just ask for a little written statement about why that person or team is special. Why do they deserve to win? So that's it, really. It's quite simple.
Good. Alana, perhaps you'll remind me. In January, we should come back to this and on the podcast, just tell schools.
Yeah, that would be great.
That if they want to enter, they need to get onto your website.
It's schoolgardening.rhs.org.uk.
And there we are.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah. We'll put that address in our podcast notes so it's available for everybody.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for having me.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
They call it Flaming June, and goodness, it was Flaming June last weekend. I was out in the garden on the Saturday. Oh, searing temperatures, and not ideal either for the really big planting that we've been doing at Hyde Hall. It'll take a little bit of nursing and some very careful watering to get that re-established. And the exhibitors at Hampton Court Palace Garden Festival, I'm afraid they sweated it out a bit too that weekend. I mean, it was so hot that even some of the hedging on gardens outside got scorched. I was interested to hear that the Dibley family, with their speciality Streptocarpus, found on the Saturday when the temperature went beyond 30 degrees centigrade, the whole lot flopped. And apparently that's what Streptocarpus do in the wild. You know, they survive by just collapsing and wilting when the temperature goes very high. And then as it drops, up they come again. Unfortunately, by the time of judging, the temperature was well below 30 and they were up again. A really magnificent display. The high temperature at home had its effect too. I've got a few apricots on the tree and they've been sitting there, two or three little laterals with very thick clusters of fruit, but they were sitting there green and bullet hard, and then almost at a blink they went from green to yellow. And I'm just watching them very carefully. I don't want the birds to take or start pecking at what few I have got. But at this time of year, it is all picking. it's almost a full-time job picking the few raspberries and strawberries and blackcurrants that I grow. But it is a time of plenty. And to be quite honest, I love those mornings when you get up early and the sky is blue and you can sense there's going to be a really good summer day on its way. What's on? Well, it's the Rydale Rose Festival on the 6th of July at Rogers Garden Centre at Pickering, one of the few retail nurseries still budding and grafting woody plants. So if you're anywhere up in the northeast and you like roses, make sure you pop in and see them. It's also the Great Yorkshire Show, 9th to the 11th of June, and the floral tent should be worth a visit. A word or two about turf and lawns. You know, when the weather is really damp and warm and the grass is growing at a pretty rapid rate, then you need to cut at least once a week. In a perfect world, you might do it twice a week if it is very wet and very warm. And this is where some of the robotic mowers come in, you know, because they're just clipping the top off all the time. Doesn't really matter too much what the weather's like. If it turns hot and dry, then the grass, of course, is going to come under some difficulty, and it's worth raising the mower blade just a little bit, and so there is a longer blade of grass just to keep that plant greener and more healthy through the dry spell. My thanks to Sutton's, sponsors of this podcast, and also my producer this week, Rich Jarman. I look forward to speaking to you next week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.